Hello, this is Martin Martel, Director of Research with Glass Lewis. Today, I'll be looking ahead to the 2019 Canadian proxy season in the company of Rob Richardson, who manages our Canadian research efforts, and his fellow analysts, Joanne O'Donnell, Paul McManus, and Aaron Leader. Rob, can you set the scene for us?
2018 brought about a shift in investor focus with increasing discussions on environmental, social, and governance issues such as diversity, climate change, and gender-based pay transparency. The dialogue between public companies and institutional investors continued to evolve in 2018, with engagement being an essential component of investor stewardship and public company accountability. We've observed a growing emphasis on focused, direct, and proactive engagement between investors and issuers, and we have seen how such engagement and transparency can result in increased year-on-year support for a company's approach to executive compensation, for example. Equally, we have seen how a perceived lack of engagement or dialogue can result in dissatisfied investors displaying opposition to an issuer's proposals. Looking ahead to the 2019 proxy season, investors will likely remain focused on a number of key issues, including board diversity and composition, environmental and social governance, and executive compensation.
Joanne, are there any notable updates on the diversity front?
Recent amendments to the Canada Business Corporation Act, or CBCA, which are expected to come into force for the 2020 proxy season, will require public companies to annually disclose their diversity policies and targets, if any, as well as statistics regarding representation of designated groups on the board and at executive level. The term designated group refers not just to women, but also Aboriginal peoples, persons with disabilities, and members of visible minorities. It should be noted that the current Canadian Securities Administrator policies refer solely to gender diversity. The CBCA amendments introduce a comply explain regime based on the approach of Canadian securities regulations. Under the comply explain method, companies are under no obligation to enhance the diversity of their boards per se. Rather, they must disclose the number and proportion of the directors and executive officers who are members of the designated groups. Issuers will also have to disclose diversity policies and targets that they have adopted or their reason for not doing so. As such, we anticipate an increase in the level of diversity disclosure from early adopters this year in preparation for the enactment of the revised CBCA. As to our own approach, Glass Lewis will generally recommend voting against the chair of the nominating committee in cases where the board of directors has no female members. We may also recommend a vote against in cases where the board has not adopted a written gender diversity policy. We will, however, adapt our approach in light of considerations such as company size, the industry in which a company operates, the gender diversity of the management team, and the wider governance profile of the company.
Will we be enhancing our approach to board diversity in any other ways this year?
From 2019, our analysis of director elections at S&P TSX 60 index companies will include board skills matrices in order to assist in assessing a board's skills and identifying any potential gaps. This is in response to increasing interest from investors in understanding board diversity in the broadest sense. Why was a particular candidate chosen? What does he or she bring to the board? And how does their appointment fit into the company's strategic planning? While skills matrices will not determine our voting recommendations in and of themselves, we may use them to underscore or assuage any board composition concerns we have identified.
Thanks, Joanne. Paul, moving on to issues of environmental and social governance, has there been any change in how investors are approaching ENS in the Canadian market?
Over the past number of years, there has been a considerably increased focus and awareness of ESG topics among shareholders and issuers alike. Investors are becoming more cognizant of the influence of ESG issues and their implications for issuers and society as a whole. More and more institutional investors are holding engagements with companies specifically to discuss environmental, climate, and sustainability issues. Common themes include health and safety, relations with Indigenous peoples, water usage, and carbon output. While these topics are certainly of growing interest to North American investors, several issuers have informed us that it is predominantly European investors who actively seek to initiate ESG-related conversations. And regardless, the development of ENS-related targets and disclosures continues to grow in importance as investors assign them increasing weight when assessing a company's risk profile.
And how have issuers been responding to these trends?
Well, it's now commonplace for larger companies to disclose an annual corporate social responsibility report, including specific targets and peer comparisons. However, some have expressed dissatisfaction with the numerous frameworks they're expected to adhere to. One issuer we engage with also expressed fatigue with the litany of inquiries they receive from various rating agencies, stating that they would need to employ a full-time resource to properly respond to all of them. We have seen plenty of variety in the quality of disclosure in this area, from market leaders that have been providing extensive disclosure for a number of years to a small number of issuers who fail to see its importance and appear to merely be paying it lip service.
Are we contemplating any change in how we deal with ESG issues going into this proxy season?
Our proxy papers continue to include ESG data and commentary provided by our partner Sustainalytics, and our analysts will continue to assess broad-level oversight of ESG issues and to hold individual directors accountable where appropriate.
Thank you, Paul. Oren, can you update us on Glass Lewis's approach to compensation this coming season?
Yes, so in line with our policy towards US-traded issuers, we've prepared a more nuanced approach towards certain trends we were starting to see across North America, with Canadian practices often being closely intertwined with what goes on in its near neighbour. As such, our updates include modified treatment of contractual payments and arrangements, front-loaded awards, clawbacks, and peer groups. In terms of front-loading, the logic goes that front-loaded awards can lock in executive services and incentives, thereby providing retention benefits and peace of mind for a company and its compensation committee over multiple years, obviating the need to make annual grants. Also, shareholders might be more willing to support a larger per-year amount if the front-loaded grant carries risk-mitigating factors and stern performance tests. Although Canada has yet to see a mammoth multi-year grant to its top executives by way of a binding special resolution on the same levels as Tesla's multi-billion dollar option grant in the US to Elon Musk, the most eye-popping award made in 2018 was to BlackBerry CEO John Chen, where the estimated total pay opportunity cleared $250 million US dollars in connection with a contract extension. Front-loaded awards present a challenge as shareholders are faced with approving a grant far larger than standard, albeit one which is supposed to serve a company's needs for multiple years. At the same time, the concern is that it ties the compensation committee's hands and might in any case be ineffective at preventing future retention grants should actual achievement not entitle the executive to his estimated opportunity. One mid-cap company in the extractive resources industry that we spoke to wanted to gauge market sentiment on an ambitious one-time equity-based award, which will amount to tens of millions of dollars. The plan is intended to span the next 8 years and incentivize the next generation of management below the current top brass to remain and carry the company forward, rather than accept offers from larger competitors. After a couple of rounds of engagement, the issuer believed it had reached a broad consensus and designed a plan that, although ostensibly large in estimated at target value, is likely to be accompanied by numerous checks and balances on severance, change in control conditions, and other performance contingent payouts. Time will tell if such companies successfully communicate their methods and earnings.
What other themes have cropped up in your engagements with companies?
It's a challenge as old as the notion of compensation itself, but peer groups continue to be a regular topic of discussion at issuer engagements. Conversations often center on the unsuitability of the Canadian stock market for finding true peers. This is a particularly pertinent point when it comes to Canadian issuers that dwarf their compatriots, as is the conundrum for Barrick Gold, for instance, since its 2018 merger with Randgold catapulted its market cap to $23 billion, notably larger than its nearest Canada-based competitors. We also spoke with a leading private equity company whose pay plan we opposed in 2018. This company was struggling to find true public peers listed on any stock exchange globally, let alone appropriate Canadian peers, something that hadn't inhibited it from awarding cash bonuses that ranked among the highest we see in the market, around about $8 to $11 million, based entirely on backward-looking board and management discretion. In this particular case, the nature of the private equity industry means that the global competition for talent is fierce, and this company has to compete with private firms who owe a far weaker reporting standard to far fewer shareholders. And so we were happy to concur with the company in question that a standard large cap TSX peer group containing REITs and banks was not an appropriate benchmark to use for our pay for performance grade. We found that companies wanting to upsize the proportion of foreign peers in their peer group tend to limit themselves to between a quarter to half foreign peers. We'd typically be skeptical of companies using a majority of foreign peers as long as their employee and executive base continues to be in Canada. In summary, we continue to be on the lookout for inappropriate or outsized peer groups and will be making sure to note any dramatic changes to companies' benchmarking practices.
Oren, thank you. Rob, finally, are there any other regulatory updates investors should be aware of?
In May 2018, Bill C-25 received royal assent, having already been passed through the Canadian Parliament back in September 2016. However, some of its more significant governance and disclosure-related amendments have not yet come into effect and are expected to come into effect in 2020. One such amendment is the tightening of the majority with resignation voting policy in director elections, whereby directors who do not meet the majority voting requirements will now remain in office only until the earlier of 90 days after the date of voting or the date when their successor is appointed or elected. This will be tighter than the current restrictions, where directors who did not receive majority support tender their resignations to the board or an applicable committee, at which stage it is up to the board or the committee to accept or reject that director's resignation. Other provisions which may only come into force once the relevant regulations have been enacted include the shortening of the duration of director terms from a maximum of 3 years to a maximum of 1 year, i.e. annual elections only instead of staggered, and also requirements that shareholders vote on individual director candidates rather than as a slate.
Rob, Joanne, Paul, Oren, thank you all very much.
This recording should not be considered a solicitation of proxies by Glass Lewis. Glass Lewis has not sought permission to do so from the SEC, nor will it. This recording is for information purposes only and should not be construed as providing investment advice. In addition, Glass Lewis makes no representation regarding the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any statement of any of our speakers in this recording. If you have any questions, please contact us via our website, www.glasslewis.com.